Independence and Expectations by Frederick K. Schroeder. There is a photo on the page, the caption, Frederick K. Schroeder. From Dan Fry. Dr. Frederick Schroeder, Commissioner of the Rehabilitation Services Administration during the Clinton administration, recognized professional in the fields of blindness education and rehabilitation, and first vice president of the National Federation of the Blind, delivered a powerful address to the participants attending the Dare to be Remarkable conference during the first plenary sessions of the gathering on December 5, 2007, resurrecting the often-discussed themes of independence and expectations with fresh and fascinating insights, he said the following.
I suppose we should begin at the beginning. Where did the structured discovery model of orientation center training come from? As Dr. Maurer has indicated, it began in California in the early 1950s, but was brought to maturity in the 1960s under the leadership of Dr. Kenneth Jernigan during his tenure as director of the Iowa Commission for the Blind. Of course, there were programs providing blindness training prior to that time or concurrent with that time. So what was different? What was distinctive in the training Dr. Jernigan developed? What made it so dramatically more effective? In a word, it was expectations. Or said another way, it was the National Federation of the Blind. For at its core, the National Federation of the Blind is blind people asserting their own right and ability to live normal, productive lives. As Dr. Jernigan so often said, the belief that given proper training and opportunity, blind people can compete on terms of equality with their sighted peers. The Iowa program was unique. It stood alone. It was not just better than other programs, it eclipsed them in its impact on the lives of blind people. It set an entirely new standard, so different from conventional training that the two could not be compared, as different from one another as the infinite and the finite. But why was this so? What made the Iowa program extraordinary? What was the quintessential difference? Was it the quality of the skills instruction? Was it the rigor of the program? Of course, but it was more than technical competence and a challenging, demanding curriculum. Dr. Jernigan understood that the isolation of the blind, the lack of opportunity, was the outgrowth of societal misconceptions about blindness, or said another way, prejudice based on myth and misunderstanding. The Iowa program was rooted in the belief that the condition of the blind was not the consequence of the inability of blind people to compete, but prejudice. It affirmatively set out to help blind people free themselves from their marginalized status by changing their own attitudes about blindness. It worked to instill in its students an understanding that society's low expectations did not represent the truth about blindness, but only the view of the majority, people who could not imagine the blind living and working alongside the sighted. To combat a lifetime of conditioning, the Iowa program pushed its students, challenged them beyond anything they could have imagined. It showed them through words and deeds that the lack of opportunity faced by blind people was not the result of blindness itself, but the result of society's low expectations. But Dr. Jernigan did something more. Every day, every month, every year, the program became better still, more challenging, more rigorous, and as a result, more successful. There was no sense of defensiveness, no sense that to do better today must mean that we did poorly yesterday, or that to do better tomorrow must mean that today's efforts are wanting. Instead, staff and students alike understood that low expectations are in us all, and that there is no shame in acknowledging that fact. Instead, they took pride in a shared sense of restlessness, a sense that the limits had not and could not be reached. But the value of doing better presumes that we begin with a strong foundation, a shared sense of purpose, and a clear vision of where we are going. Unfortunately, conventional programs have used the idea of doing better, making progress, as an excuse for failing to challenge their students, as a shield for low expectations. Throughout their history, conventional programs have used the doing better standard to justify and defend uninspired and uninspiring programs. As rehabilitation professionals, we believe in the inherent worth of all people, regardless of their ability to achieve according to external measures. We acknowledge and respect individual differences, individual strengths and abilities, but our own humanity is turned against us, used to justify low expectations. We are told that if a person is doing better, making progress, who are we to devalue that person's achievements just because they fall short of our elitist expectations? We are told that if a person only learns to pour a cup of coffee, that should be respected every bit as much as the achievement of a blind person who graduates from Yale Law School. But there is no accountability in such a view. If the person taught to pour a cup of coffee had the ability to do more, had the potential to attend Yale Law School, the individual has not been helped, but damaged. And we can and must denounce that damage, even if done with caring, kind words, and sincere sentiment. Without a strong foundation, without a shared sense of purpose and a clear vision of where we are going, the doing better standard only serves to relegate the oppressed to continued oppression. I respect the illiterate, people who lack the opportunity to acquire an education, but I do not celebrate the lack of opportunity that inevitably results. I respect the unemployed, but I do not celebrate the 80% unemployment rate among the blind. As Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof so eloquently said, there's no shame in being poor, but it's no great honor either. I respect differences, but I do not celebrate the consequences of low expectations. I respect the victims of oppression and prejudice, but I do not respect prejudice and oppression. Doing better is not enough. Not enough if it means helping people move from despair to lesser despair, from hopelessness to lesser hopelessness, from poverty to lesser poverty, when something more is within reach. This week, we will share ideas, analyze our successes, and discuss the challenges that remain. We know the fundamentals. We know the principles that made the Iowa program the model. But how do we know if we are doing well, doing enough? How do we know if our programs are good, very good, excellent, or poor? We know we must continually strive to do better, make progress from day to day, month to month, year to year. But does doing better mean we are doing enough, mean that we are doing all that we should, or has it become an excuse for complacency, justifying mediocrity by saying we're doing better than we were, and we're doing better all the time? Doing better in and of itself is not and cannot be the standard. If a racehorse is running at half the speed of others, you could argue it's making progress while still falling farther and farther behind. I am reminded of the story of the haberdasher who sells a suit for $100, even though he paid $120 for it himself. When asked how he can afford to take such a loss, he said, "I'll make it up on volume." Doing better only works if we begin with a sound foundation and if we have a clear idea of where we are going. I believe the greatest challenge that confronts us is not external. It is not the challenge of finding the money to support our programs, even though it may feel like it from day to day. It is not the challenge of recruiting more students. It is not the challenge of working with a changing demographic, more and more older blind individuals, more and more people with additional disabilities, or even the challenge of finding new activities, new experiences to keep our programs alive and vital. I believe our greatest challenge is not external, but lies within ourselves, within each of us individually, and within all of us collectively. It is the challenge of resisting false pride, the idea that there is nothing more for us to learn. It is the challenge of resisting complacency, resisting falling into comfortable patterns, putting off the hard things. It is the challenge of facing our own beliefs and attitudes about blindness, our own fears and uncertainty. It is the challenge of resisting the paralysis of doubt. Our responsibility is not to perpetuate comfort, an illusion of success, a facade concealing our own conditioning and low expectations. We cannot allow doing better to replace doing well, nor should we try. Can a blind person do anything a sighted person can do? Of course not. I cannot be an NFL quarterback in spite of my obvious physical prowess. I cannot be a brain surgeon in spite of my obvious Einstein-esque intellect. But that is not where the problem lies. It's not in deciding what is impossible to be done. Many, many things can be done with adaptations. And the question becomes when the adaptation is so much as to make the idea of a blind person participating in an activity so impractical that it is not worth the effort. In other words, I believe there are some things that cannot be efficiently done without sight, but where I draw that line, the line between the impossible and the impractical, has been shaped by my own beliefs and attitudes about blindness, and consequently, I suspect has been set too low. I need you to help me. I need you to push and challenge me, not as an inquisitor or bully, but as a colleague and friend, as someone who shares a deeply held belief in the ability of blind people and who wants our programs to be a part of helping blind people break free from the bonds of stereotype and tradition. I need you to help me, and you need me to help you. By helping each other, will we be able to replace doing better with doing well, replace progress with success, real success? Who knows? But without it, failure is certain. Dr. Jernigan's assertion that with proper training and opportunity, blind people can compete on terms of equality was not just a slogan, not just a dream or far-off hope, not simply hortatory words to lift our spirits, cheer our otherwise empty lives. The assertion of equality was meant deeply and literally. It was a remarkable declaration made by a remarkable man on behalf of a class of people for whom equality had never before been imagined. It was remarkable in the 1960s, and it continues to be remarkable today, not because of a deficiency in the will or ability of blind people to compete, but remarkable because of the oppression and associated lack of opportunity blind people continue to face. We should celebrate the work we have done, the difference we have made in the lives of our students, but we should view our success with a skeptical eye, always questioning, always wondering whether we could have done more. The truth is that if we are to learn from the Iowa experience, learn from Dr. Jernigan, the answer is that we could have and should have done more. I do not say this to belittle or demean our past accomplishments. I say it because I believe that understanding our own attitudes about blindness and their impact on our work is fundamental to our success. What held us back was not a lack of imagination or energy. What we did yesterday and what we do tomorrow are a result of what we believe about blindness. Changing society's attitudes about blindness is a long and painstaking process. Changing our students' attitudes, raising their confidence and expectations, is equally long and painstaking. But neither is longer or more painstaking and painful than changing our own attitudes about blindness and elevating our own expectations. Our challenge, our responsibility is to face our own prejudices, our own misconceptions about blindness, face them honestly, not with a wink and a nod, not with an unspoken smugness that while we have a vestige of societal conditioning, others are consumed by it. There is no place for arrogance, no place for false pride, or for that matter, false humility. The work we do is too important to allow ourselves to drift into complacency, too important to allow ourselves to become comfortable and self-satisfied. To achieve our goal, I need you to help me, and you need me to help you. And we need the collective dreams and aspirations of blind people. Blind people who have joined together to encourage and support one another, to expand opportunities in education and employment, and to work together to change society's low expectations for the blind. We need the National Federation of the Blind. We cannot do it alone. And more to the point, we the professionals cannot take the lead. The drive, the perspective, The push for equality must come from blind people themselves. That is the lesson of the Iowa experience. That is what made the difference. It was true in the 1960s, and it is true today. Doing better is not enough. Doing better only works if we begin with a strong foundation, the foundation that is blind people themselves, the foundation that is the National Federation of the Blind.